You're listening to the Creating Your Own Path podcast, episode number 92. Hey everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Jen Snyder, and as always, you can listen to the show on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, or your favorite podcast app. You can also catch a new episode each week at creatingyourownpath.com. So today's show is one of the few episodes I have had so far with a repeat guest. If you've been listening to Creating Your Own Path from the beginning, you know that Jana Marlies Marin and her husband Jeremy Marin were the first guests to be featured way back in episode one. Their story is pretty inspiring, and I definitely recommend you check out that episode if you haven't already. But a lot has changed since I sat down with them in February of 2014. And when Jana reminded me that she would be celebrating 5 years of publishing her literary nonfiction magazine Under the Gum Tree this month, I knew I wanted to chat with her for this particular segment. So just a little bit of backstory. Jana and I have worked together on several freelance projects over the years. I have been published in Under the Gum Tree, and we currently work together at Winning Edits, where she holds down the editorial fort as managing editor. That said, we're also friends, and I have watched as she has built the publication into what it is today. And she's also done it while working on other projects and while she's managed some pretty serious health issues. In the interview, we talk about how Jana's health issues, namely her multiple sclerosis diagnosis, have not only played a role in her professional career, but also how they have actually helped her realign her priorities in both life and business. We also chat about her publication and what it means to write and read true stories, the business side of producing an independent literary arts magazine, and the importance of being patient when it comes to realizing your goals. Now, even if creative nonfiction is not your cup of tea, I hope you will take the time to listen to Jana's story. It was great to get kind of an update on everything she's been working on, and I think you'll all get a lot out of it. So let's get to Jana. Jana.
Jen.
Welcome to the show again. You have been here before.
I have. Thank you for having me back.
Yeah. So it was way back in season one. You were my first guest, which was amazing.
With my husband.
Yes. And you guys were my guinea pigs for this show. And so we know a little bit about your professional background, but I wanted to have you back on the show because I want to talk about your magazine, Under the Gum Tree. So you're celebrating 5 years this month, which is very, very exciting. Can you talk to us about the publication a little bit and kind of how it came to be?
I'm a little giddy because 5 years is a big deal. I might cry.
That's okay if you cry. I would cry too if I had been doing a publication for 5 years.
So the magazine was born out of my desire just to have a place to tell stories. At the time that I started it, I had a blog, just a personal blog, and I was working on revamping my blog. And I wanted my blog to be this place where I was going to tell my personal story. And the more I worked on it, the more I was feeling like, well, I'd love to be able to incorporate other people's stories too, not just my own. So maybe it could be sort of like an online magazine-ish thing. I don't know. I didn't know what to call it at the time. And then the more that I started working on it, the more I just was kind of hit with this idea of, no, hello, you've been wanting to start a magazine. This is your magazine idea. Like, do it. And it took me about a year to visualize and conceptualize and figure out what the actual structure to it would be. And the first issue was published actually technically in August of 2011, but I consider like fall the anniversary time of year, and fall, October, is when we publish our last issue of every year. So that's like our official anniversary month now. So that first issue was really me emailing everyone that I know who's a writer saying, hey, I'm starting this thing. Do you have anything I can publish? Would you let me publish your work? And that's how the first issue came. I had this vision of incorporating written content with visual content, because one of the things that I love so much about magazines is the full color, the glossy, the photographs, and I knew that I didn't want a magazine that was text only, which is a lot of what you see in the space of literary magazines is text only. And even if there is art or visuals, it's typically black and white, mostly because there's not a lot of funding for these type of publications. So I emailed a photographer friend that I had. I emailed some other artist friends that I had and said, hey, I'm starting this thing. I need some visuals. What do you got? Emailed writer friends again, said, hey, I'm starting this thing. What do you got?
Yeah.
And
that was that.
That was that.
So, I mean, what was the overall response? Because I think it's really easy to say, like, and I do this all the time, because people ask me, how did you get to interview so-and-so? And I'm like, I emailed them. Mm-hmm. They were nice. Mm-hmm. Right? And that sound makes it sound really, really easy. But it's hard to ask people for things.
It is.
Because even if somebody already has something written, they get to choose whether or not they publish it with you. They might want to submit it somewhere else, or they might have another idea for that piece or those photos or whatever, or that art. And so, like, what was that process like for you? And then what was the overall reaction from people who you email?
Well, I think for that first issue it was a little unique because I really was starting with people who I knew. I already had relationships with them. They already trusted me in some capacity. I had done other types of projects, not necessarily publishing projects, but I think these people just knew what to expect from me in terms of standard and quality, and they knew that I would do right by their work. And so in that case, frankly, I just have the type of personality that is just going to ask. You know, the worst thing that can happen is somebody will say no.
Yeah.
And that's sort of been my mode of operation my whole life. I want to try this thing, so I'm going to ask and we'll see what happens, you know. And it took me probably 6 months to collect all the content for that first issue.
Okay.
Which is a long time. Like, when you're trying to put something together and print it and create like a physical, tangible artifact.
And hope that it ends up as like a regular publication.
A regular publication. That's right. I can't wait for 6 months to have all my content now anymore, because the magazine is quarterly.
Right.
So there's definitely that, like, okay, this is the first issue. I have this really long runway to make that goal a reality. Because with a magazine in particular, you have to have enough content for it to feel like a complete publication.
Right.
I think it's different from other types of publications. Like, if, for example, in the online space, where you could potentially launch something with maybe only one or two posts, because then you get something new, you can put it up right away.
Right.
But a magazine is like one complete volume. It has to have some like heft to it to feel complete.
Right. And so when you kind of touched on this, but you talked about how you thought maybe it was going to be online and and you decided to do print. So talk to me about the reason behind that. So because it is, like you just said, it is so much easier to post things on the internet than it is to print a publication. So what made you decide to do print?
Well, when I started, I'll clarify, there is a digital version of the magazine.
That's true.
So there's a print version and a digital version. And when I started, I completely assumed that the digital version would be the version that people would want and consume and subscribe for, because it's $2 a month for digital versus $7 a month for the print. Mm-hmm. It's so much cheaper. It's so much easier. You can just take it with you anywhere you want. And the whole download thing is super easy. And it, you know, when I start, then I was like a year or two into it before I realized that the print was selling more than the digital. And at the time when I launched, so there were a couple of factors that happened with the print version. Number one, the technology was just in place for me to be able to do it. I started with a print on demand model.
Okay.
Where all I had to do was upload the PDF, and it was printed only when somebody bought it.
Right, which is so much easier than trying to fulfill it, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
And it's so much more cost effective than trying to do a print run of like 20 copies when you're brand new. Right. And no, you know, any printer out there would laugh at you if you came to them with an order of that few.
Right, but, your husband would laugh at you if you had 20,000 sitting in your house. Too. Yes. So like there's a, you have to strike that balance. Okay.
You do have to strike that balance.
Okay.
But so the print on demand model was like hugely instrumental with launching the magazine. And so I was saying it was like a year or two into publishing before I realized that it was actually the print version that was selling more than the digital, which I think is because it's just, well, if you see it, the print is just so compelling and impressive to hold and touch and feel. And there aren't a lot of magazines like it publishing the type of work that we publish in such a beautiful way.
Yeah, no, it's a really high quality. Just I'm kind of a paper nerd. So like,
yeah,
so it's a very high quality stock and like, yeah, it's a beautiful magazine.
Thank you. Thank you. And I was surprised by that. I really was surprised because I thought for sure that the digital would just be the thing that would be like easy and quick and easy to sell. And that would be kind of like a money, the money maker.
Right.
And it's not, it still isn't. And so then as I kept going with it, I only recently this year switched from print on demand to now I do have like a more traditional, I do a print run every issue. It's still a, what we call a short run. But when you're trying to do more copies in bulk, that is when the cost does start to go down.
Sure, sure, sure.
Whereas in the print on demand model, the cost doesn't go down the more copies you print. That whole process, like hiring a printer, was really kind of not eye-opening, but it took me back to this like early part of my life that I hadn't accessed in a lot of years. My dad and my grandpa are both printers.
Wow.
So my grandpa owned a print shop in New Jersey for, I don't know, probably something like 40 plus years.
Wow.
And my dad moved from New Jersey to California and opened his own print shop and had a print shop for 30 years. And I actually grew up like going to work with him sometimes on the weekends and after school and working in the print shop and being around machines that were printing books in some cases, calendars, notepads, you know, letterhead, business cards.
Yeah, all the print goods that we...
All the stuff that we now get with like a click of a button online.
Right. Yeah. I know it's a tough thing for printers, but...
Yeah, and you talked about being a paper nerd. I mean, there was this like floor-to-ceiling shelf in my dad's print shop with every kind of paper you could imagine, and he would just like reams of paper with like the front flap open.
That's actually what heaven looks like in my mind.
And as a kid, I would just go to this wall and like pick out like any color I wanted, any like stock I wanted, and just be like, okay, I have my little rainbow stack of papers that I can draw on and write on.
Yeah.
And so I'm sort of back in that world, just on a different side of the equation.
Wow. So, but when you were creating the publication, like you drew upon your background, like obviously, mm-hmm. you know, if people go back and listen to episode one, they will know that you have a background in like magazines and stuff like this. So how did that play into your decision, or did it?
Oh, it absolutely did.
Okay.
Yes, I have magazine experience. And when I was working for the publishing company as a managing editor, I sort of had this idea in the back of my mind, someday I'll have my own magazine. I never knew what that magazine would be, you know, until years later. And when I was exploring this idea of like some sort of storytelling medium, mm-hmm. it was just sort of like this aha moment. Well, duh, you have magazine experience.
Maybe put that
this
to good
should
use.
Be a magazine.
Time to put that experience to you.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, when we talk about your publication, so Under the Gum Tree is, you know, it's a literary arts magazine, mm-hmm. and you work, you know, pretty much exclusively with creative nonfiction on the written content
mm-hmm.
side. So, you know, the two of us, along with, you know, probably every former English major that's listening, understands the concept of creative nonfiction, but I feel like it's a little bit of like what we would envision maybe like a college class title to be sure. versus like, I don't know, unpack that for everybody. Like, what does it mean to write or read creative nonfiction?
It's definitely an academic term.
Okay.
I'll give you that.
Yeah.
And the term, there's like, I could like go way deep and talk about where it originated and like people argue about where, who coined it and blah, blah, blah. But, we don't need to go there.
I can see you're passionate about it.
Well, because the thing that listeners should understand is really, it's just an umbrella term that we use to talk about true stories.
Right.
And there are different, even like subgenres of creative nonfiction and the shape and the form that those true stories can take. Mm-hmm. So if you imagine going into a bookstore, yeah, there's sort of a fiction section, but it's not just fiction. It's mystery, romance, historical fiction. There's all of these subgenres to fiction. And if you go to a bookstore, yeah, there's a nonfiction section, but there's all these subgenres to nonfiction. And the creative nonfiction term is meant to separate like your cookbooks right. and your business books and your self-help books from this other form of nonfiction that is about how we craft and tell true stories. There's a magazine called Creative Nonfiction, if uh-huh. you can believe it.
Yeah, I can.
And the tagline that they use is true stories well told.
Okay.
Which I love because that really just kind of encapsulates exactly what we're talking about when we say creative nonfiction. So the subgenre that most people are probably familiar with is memoir.
Okay.
And there's all these titles that sort of popularize that particular form of creative nonfiction, like Angela's Ashes mm-hmm. and This Boy's Life, and more contemporarily, Wild.
Right.
And even like Eat, Pray, Love. Mm-hmm. So if you read those books, you're reading true stories, but they read almost like fiction.
Right.
So that's what we mean. We're talking about how these stories are crafted. We employ the same devices in terms of scene and dialogue and character development that you would expect to see in fiction. We're talking about doing the same thing in nonfiction.
Right.
And memoir is a French word that is all about memory. Mm-hmm. So that particular form is very personal. It's a genre that's based on memory. So it's usually very intimate. And those titles I mentioned are kind of all fit that.
Sure.
But creative nonfiction can also be research based and even more in the journalistic realm. If you think of writers like Michael Pollan, his most recent book that I've read is Cooked, which is about cooking. Mm-hmm. And it's packed with tons of scientific research about, and historical research about, like, how cooking originated in different cultures and kind of evolved over time. But it's also intertwined with his own personal story of learning how to cook.
Oh, cool.
It's a really great book.
I'll need to read it.
I highly recommend it. Yeah. But the point is, creative nonfiction can take all of these different types of forms, and like I said, it's really just about true stories.
Okay, so that brings me to another question, because memory and truth are two interesting things. And
yes.
So, you know, and this is just something I've always been curious about, and like I have some opinions on it, but I'm just, there's this kind of fuzzy line, because what's true to somebody, perhaps because it's via memory or something like that, may not be true to somebody else. Some stories are true to people because of what they believe versus what's true to others because they believe something else. And so, like, how do those lines come into play for you? Like, when you're reading all of these, I don't know, talk to me about that.
For me personally, or
you as the editor?
For me as the editor, when I read creative nonfiction, I read it as the author's truth.
Okay.
And I also teach creative nonfiction writing, and that's mm-hmm. what I teach my students, because people come into my classes, they want to write their personal story, mm-hmm. but they're hung up on this question.
Right. I know. I get hung up on all the time.
Yeah. So I tell them to just don't think about it, which I know is not what you want to hear.
No.
But the reality is you have to just write what you need to write without thinking about, one, how it's going to be perceived, or two, if others are going to object to it. And there's this, you know, some wise person, it's probably attributed anonymously online these days, said, if you want people to write nicely about you, you should have behaved better.
Oh, sure, sure, sure. I feel like... I feel like Anne Lamott actually like said something
probably
in a later form.
And then there's something else along the lines of, well, if you want to tell the story differently, then write your own story.
Right.
So the point is, when you're writing memoir in particular, because it's, you know, we're not talking about, say, like the Michael Pollan type of creative nonfiction where it is
sure
heavily researched.
Right.
But if you're just writing your own personal story, that's your truth.
Right.
No one can take that away from you. It's your experience. And yeah, we can argue about, well, did it really happen, or is that just the way you remembered that it happened? But that actually is part of the memoir genre for a lot of writers. It is exploring what is true, and they're questioning for themselves mm-hmm. what is true, and writing about it is part of the process of deciphering that.
Yeah. Well, I have to tell you, I get hung up on that all the time. And I don't know, you know, because I have written things in the past where the questions do come up. And it usually has to do with, like, their perception of an event or a person. Mm-hmm, or, mm-hmm. But because it's my memory, it's my story.
Right.
I don't know, it's hard to defend that. And just, maybe the point is that you don't have to defend
it. I don't think you have to defend it. And if you really are worried about it, to just get over the hurdle of actually writing and get past that hurdle, mm-hmm. just say, I remember.
Right. Kind of qualify it in a way.
No one can.
And then you can edit it out later.
Yeah, and no one can refute your memory.
Right.
Because yeah. you're the only one who has that experience of your memory.
That's true. That's true. Well, and you know, not everybody who's listening wants to write creative nonfiction.
Right.
They might want to read it, but mm-hmm. But I just thought it was interesting to kind of dive into that a little bit, just because, you know, when you say literary arts, that doesn't always mean the same thing to everybody.
Right.
And, I think it's important for people to remember when they do hear a true story, like told well, mm-hmm. that's creative nonfiction.
And yeah.
So that's it.
And it is art.
And it is art. Oh, and I should qualify the statement, is that I've been published in your magazine before, but I am also a reader of your magazine, and the stories you publish are really beautiful.
Thank you.
And important to read. Some of them I'm like, wow, I'm really glad I read that, mm-hmm. you know? So let's talk about your anniversary. Because technically it's mm-hmm. August, whatever. It's October.
Yeah.
It's your anniversary. We're calling it.
It's my anniversary.
So you're celebrating, you're celebrating 5 years. And that's a big deal, like you said in the beginning. And I know, because I know you personally, I know that you have also just gone through what seems like 1 million ups and downs along the way. You've dealt with, like, personal health issues and a ton of other stuff. So can you kind of talk about that? And then also how you have managed, like from a business perspective, how have you managed to really keep pushing forward with the magazine, even when all of that really tough stuff was happening?
Yeah. So the magazine was launched in 2011, and then I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 2012. It was about 8 months after the fact. And that was a really huge blow and a huge struggle. And my husband, Jeremy, and I also had a business at the time, which is what we were talking about on the first episode of your show. Mm-hmm. And man, we got married in 2011. So
it was all new.
It was all new, and figuring out how to manage my health. And, you know, I really just, what ended up happening was I sort of like pared back on as much as I possibly could, and except the magazine was the one thing that I was like, I just started this. I want it to continue and see where I can take it. I can't quit now. You know, at the time of the diagnosis, that was like out of the question. And then every year after that, it was sort of revisiting that question. Okay, does something need to give? if so, what? And the magazine was never an option every time I came to that question. And Jeremy and I did come to the big decision of ultimately closing our business. And it was, again, that question, does something need to give? What is the thing that is going to go if something has to go? And when I think about the things that require my energy, because that's for me what it ultimately comes down to, is I'm constantly making decisions about where do I allocate my energy. Mm-hmm. And it's also about, okay, if I'm going to spend energy somewhere, what are the places that also just suck the energy out of me?
Without giving me anything back. Yeah.
And the magazine was always the thing that, like, fueled me. It was, yes, I was giving it energy, but it was also recharging me.
Yeah.
And I have a really amazing staff. I mean, it's definitely one of those things where it's bigger than I am now.
Right.
I think I have like 12 or 13 people who are on the masthead as my staff, who I wouldn't be able to do it without them.
Right.
And when I started, it was definitely just me, and I recruited like one or two friends to be like, hey, help me like edit this stuff that I have to publish now. Right. But since those days, I have a very dedicated team of staff who are all volunteer, by the way.
Which is crazy.
I know.
In this day and age.
But that just speaks to, I feel how important it is what we're doing.
Right.
You know?
Right. Well, and you've gone to conferences before, mm-hmm. and done events where people read some of the stories live, and you've had incredible attendance at these events, right?
Yes.
Talk to me about that.
Yeah. So there's an event every year called AWP. It stands for the Association of Writers and Writing Programs. It's, again, an academic conference.
I know, but I have looked at that conference, and it looks so neat. Maybe that makes me kind of a nerd, but it looks pretty cool.
It's for nerds like us.
Okay.
It really is.
Okay.
And, I mean, it's academic because, like, every university that has a writing program or a writing publication is there.
Okay.
And so I'm one of the few like indie publications that shows up at this thing. And yes, so what year are we in? This is still 2016.
And
I was just in LA earlier this year for that conference. Mm-hmm. And I partnered with another publication to host an event. And one of the great things about this conference is I go and I'm a vendor with the magazine. And now that I've been publishing for 5 years, I've published 100+ writers.
Right.
And usually at least 30, 40, 50 of them are all also at this conference.
Sure.
It's the only time that I get to like see all of these people in person in real life. Mm-hmm. And so I hosted this event with another publication. We each had something like four or five readers, mm-hmm. reading work that has been published in our publication. And we had like 125 people turn out.
Right, which is,
is huge.
That's huge.
It is huge.
For an indie publication to have that.
It is huge.
So,
yes.
You know, I know that maybe doesn't sound, you know, you're not selling out stadiums or anything, but well, still, but for a teeny tiny publication.
For a teeny tiny
publication.
With a volunteer staff. And in the literary magazine publishing world, 5 years is still very young.
Okay.
I mean, it's like a huge milestone because it sort of proves that we have some staying power, mm-hmm. but it's also still very young because I'm in the league with these university magazines that have all been around for like 30 years.
Right.
You know?
Sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so your, you know, writers and readers depend on you too.
Yes.
Just because we like writing and reading.
Yeah.
That kind of work. But yeah, it's interesting that you talked about energy because I think that is so important, like no matter what business you're in.
Yeah.
You could be making widgets. I don't care. Like, it's important still to consider like is this fulfilling?
Right.
You know, is this going to make me happy long term?
Right.
And you mentioned the closing down of Think House, which is, again, if people listen to the episode in season one, they'll kind of understand the background there. But so what were the considerations? Like, what was it about that where you knew, like, okay, that's what's got to go versus the magazine? Like, how did you differentiate for yourself?
So Think House was a co-working space. Mm-hmm. And I was very involved with the co-working movement in Sacramento when it started years ago. And I was interested in participating in that community out of my own personal need.
Okay.
I was freelancing. Actually, I had recently left the magazine world, started freelancing. So I went from like being a part of a really collaborative creative team to working from home I was by myself and in isolation. And if you can't tell, I'm kind of an extrovert. So that was really hard for me. And I just was like, what if there were other people like me and we all just went to the same place every day to work on whatever it is we're working on? And well, what do you know? Co-working exists. And at the time, this was like the end of 2007 and it didn't exist yet. It had just started in San Francisco. And again, I'm the type of person who was like, well, that doesn't exist, so maybe I should just go ahead and start it. And, you know, then like 7 years later or whatever it was, we had this space. And when I had the idea for it, I never envisioned myself as being the one who had to manage and run the space, at least not by myself.
Right.
Because all I really needed was a place to go and work.
Right.
And so we were creating this space out of a personal need. And with my health, like, it started to become a suck. Because a suck of energy is what I mean.
Yeah.
Because it required me to be somewhere every day. It required me to like get up and be ready for the day at a certain time. Mm-hmm. It required me to interact with people all day, every day, regardless of whether I wanted to or not, which is almost the opposite of what I was just saying in terms of my need of getting out of the house. But my health situation really changed my personal needs.
Right.
I started needing to be able to sleep in, like, on a weekday, on a quote-unquote business day, if my health dictated that that day. I started needing to just have more quiet time and more downtime, even if I didn't always want it. But my body was telling me, hey, no, we can't make it down the stairs today, actually, you know?
Yeah.
And for Jeremy, he was working a part-time job and helping me run the business, but then he also had to start taking care of me.
Right.
And
that's just a lot.
It was a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what sort of, it ended up being the thing that kept taking energy away.
Yeah, so when we were evaluating where is our energy going, mm-hmm. where are we getting energy? Unfortunately, it was a hard decision to make, but ultimately the business was the biggest energy suck and the least energy giver.
Okay. Okay. But I like that, you know, it's a good like metric to look at mm-hmm. for people, regardless of what.
It's a hard metric to look at because it was, for me at least, until my health really became this like prominent factor, mm-hmm. I never looked at energy as a metric.
Right.
And I didn't know how to, I still have a hard time with like using the word metric as like if it's really easy to quantify mm-hmm. when it's not.
No, of course not. Of course not.
So yeah, it definitely was like this really huge paradigm shift for me to start thinking about energy as this exchange mm-hmm. of I give some and I get some.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's interesting for people to think about. Mm-hmm. It's interesting for me to think about mm-hmm. Because people do ask me, you know, like, well, why are you, because I'll say, oh my gosh, I have like 4 podcast episodes I have to edit. They're like, well, why don't you just put that on pause? Like, why don't you just stop doing that for a while? And I was like, oh,
Yeah.
It breaks my heart to think
you
about it.
You can't imagine doing it.
No.
And that was it with the magazine for me. Every time I was faced with a decision of something has to go, what's it going to be? It was never going to be the magazine.
Yeah. Well, we're all glad it was not the magazine.
Thank you.
Because you've reached 5 years and you're celebrating 5 years. Okay. So talk to me
about really believe it.
How you're celebrating 5 years, because, you know, you're a local publication. However, you are doing something that anybody can participate in. So talk about how you're celebrating your five-year mark.
I'm doing an event that is kind of ambitious.
Okay.
And I'm calling it a national nonfiction simulcast.
Okay.
That means that Under the Gum Tree is partnering with three other magazines, from one from Ohio and two from Pennsylvania.
Okay.
So oddly East Coast publications. We're each hosting our own local event with readers, but it's going to be one huge online event because we will be live streaming.
Okay. So I guess, how does that work for people if they wanted to kind of tune in to see what it was all about?
If they wanted to tune in, they can just go to underthegumtree.com/live.
Okay.
Where the video is going to stream
on
October 29th.
Okay.
5 o'clock Pacific and 8 o'clock Eastern.
Okay. That's really exciting, and that is ambitious, because I know the technology that has to go on behind the scenes.
Yeah, so the technology, like, you and I feel like are kind of technology geeks. Like, we get off on figuring this stuff out and, like, setting it up and being like, no, we can totally do this. I did this once before on a much smaller scale for the magazine's two-year anniversary, where it was just a Sacramento event, but I had authors from across the country.
Oh, that's right.
Join remotely. And then the whole thing was projected so we could see them.
That's right.
Right? Uh-huh. This is the first time I've attempted to involve other publications with, like, locations of their own. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, you're kind of trying to picture it, and it's abstract and complicated and hard to visualize, but
it's going to work.
It's going to work. And again, we're talking about, some of these are university publications where I have to, like, kind of walk them through the technology setup.
Okay. So you are spearheading it, though.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
100%.
Okay. Well, that's good. It's good that they have a tech nerd on their side to help them figure it out. So that's good.
Oh, yeah. I don't think people would do it unless I said, no, this can be done and it's relatively easy and I promise I'll show you how to do it.
Those are the three things everybody needs to hear.
Yeah. Also, it's not going to cost you anything as long as you have the equipment.
The equipment and time.
Yeah.
Okay. So these will be people who are reading things that have been published, pieces that have been published in your magazine.
Yeah. So
and the other magazines.
All four of the magazines will have readers reading work that has been published in their magazine.
That is very exciting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we look forward to that.
Me too. Here, we're recording at the end of September, and I'm still working out some of the details. So
that's okay.
I'm looking forward to it too when it all comes together.
Yeah, it'll be great. So, okay. So, you know, like we keep saying, you've hit 5 years. So, I don't know. As you look back, I guess not just on the past 5 years, because, you know, that's been what we just talked about. It's been kind of ups and downs, but the magazine has kind of stuck it out. But kind of talk about your career as a whole. So what advice would you have given yourself in the early days? Like, young Jana, what would you tell her?
Oh, young Jana. She's so ambitious. I had to really think about that one, because old Jana is still ambitious and, like, constantly sort of, like, forward-looking. Mm-hmm. So I think I would have to say be patient, because young Jana had these expectations that her magazine would be wildly popular, like, right out the gate.
Right.
And the thing is, not only are you building a reputation and a track record that people can look to and see, like, a trajectory, but you're also building trust within the space or the community that you're trying to establish yourself. So for me personally, this event that I'm attempting in October is, I would not have been able to do it 5 years ago, because as a newbie on the scene, people are looking at me like, well, who are you? And right. why, you know, why should we pay attention to you?
Right.
And with the type of magazine that I have in particular, literary magazines get their work via submission from writers. So writers are sending in their complete work for publishing, to be considered for publication. Mm-hmm. And when I first started, even writers, like I had to learn, earn my track record and trust with writers to be like, oh, you're going to be around for a while. So it's okay for me to like send your work, send my work to you and be published by you because you're not going to disappear after a year.
Right.
Because in the writing world, when you have publishing credentials or like, you know, your list of where you've been published, you want though that list to be substantial. Eventually you're kind of working toward having a name for yourself based on where you've been published. Mm-hmm. And you don't want some like no name publication on there that doesn't exist anymore.
Right. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. And it's a, like as a writer who submits for publication on a regular basis, for me, it's become more, you know, quality versus quantity. So right. when I was first starting out, I was just like, you know, submitting all the things right. to all the places,
right?
Just to try and get my foot in the door. But yeah, you know, you also just want quality, which
right.
Under the Gum Tree has. So so no worries there. But that's really good advice. I like the be patient thing because that's something I have trouble with too. So just kind of wrapping things up, talk to us about the best place online to find out about both Under the Gum Tree and the rest of your work.
So my personal website is janamarlise.com, and I am Jana Marlise everywhere except for Twitter, where I'm just Jana.
Okay.
And then Under the Gum Tree is underthegumtree.com, and it's Under Gum Tree on the social networks because... Okay. Under the Gum Tree was taken.
I understand that one too. I do. It's a common problem.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Jana, thank you for your time and thank you for letting me come to your space and talking to you again. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. So that was Jana. As she mentioned, you can find out more about her work at janamarlise.com. You can also learn more about Under the Gum Tree by visiting underthegumtree.com. As always, I will be linking up to everything we mentioned today in the show over at creatingyourownpath.com, and that includes the link for the storytelling simulcast Jana mentioned. Please don't miss out on that one, you guys. And you guys, I kind of want to hear from you. I am curious to know how you liked getting an update with a past guest. I always strive to share new stories each week, but I know it's also interesting to hear how people's lives and businesses evolve over time. If you have just a few minutes, please head over to Twitter or Instagram. I am at Jennifer E. Snyder. And tell me which past guests you might like to hear from again. I'm just kind of curious, and I would really like to hear your thoughts on it as I look forward to the next season of the show. And one last thing, if you love the show, be sure to rate it and review it on iTunes. Tell a friend or share it on social media. The more often you share the episodes that you love, the more likely it is that others will find CYOP when they need it. As always, thank you for listening, you guys, and I'll catch you next week.